Welcome to episode 272 of the Women of the Military podcast. This week, my guest is Janet Hudson. Janet joined the Air Force in 1986 and deployed as a nurse in Desert Storm. She shared her experience about joining the Air Force, deploying for Desert Storm, and becoming a nurse anesthesiologist for her last few years in the Air Force. She left the military around 12 years so she could continue her career as a nurse and provide stability for her family. She retired from nursing in January after a 42-year career, but that's not the end of her career. She is working today through LifeWave patches to help people find natural healing, and she also volunteers with veterans in her local community. I'm really excited for this episode, and I'm really thankful to Janet for supporting the podcast through Patreon.com. If you would like to support the podcast, you can go to Patreon.com/Women of the Military and learn all the ways that you can support the podcast there. And I also want to remind you that Women of the Military is available on Reese Across America Radio on Fridays at 7 p.m. Eastern and Saturdays at 11 a.m. Eastern. You can listen on iHeartRadio, the TuneIn app, or Odyssey. Now with that out of the way, let's get started with this week's interview. Welcome everyone to Women of the Military podcast. I'm really excited to have Janet here. She contacted me like right as I finished all my recordings. I think I did all the stuff that's in March and December. So she contacted me right after that. And so I was like, let's get this interview scheduled because she's supporting me on Patreon. And I really appreciate that. So we can finally set up the interview. I feel like it's been forever, but that's, I guess, what happens when you batch stuff.
That's okay. I'm just real excited to be on here.
Yeah. So let's start with, why did you decide to join the military?
Well, there's a couple of layers to that. My dad was 20-year career Army. And so I was the Army brat, right, for most of my younger years. And I think, really developed a sense of patriotism and wanting to serve my country. Then I actually married somebody who went into the Air Force, and I traveled around with him for a little while because I was waiting to get, I had a 2-year nursing degree and I was waiting to get my 4-year degree done, which I actually finished while he was remotely stationed in Iceland. So once that happened, then I went into the Air Force and we were stationed at our first base together in Myrtle Beach.
Awesome. So you decided to join the Air Force and you went in as a nurse. And so what was the process for, you know, like, is there a special officer training for nurses, or what was that process like?
Not really. Pretty much all officers train together compared to enlisted people. My husband really, you know, gave me a hard time about that we had it made, you know, because we'd have to do all the stuff he had to do. But yeah, you're pretty much put in all together. Doesn't really matter medically or not, but just so that you could learn, you know, the ins and outs of being an officer and what that entitled. And yeah, so it was fairly easy training, certainly different from anything I had experienced in my nursing career up until then, but definitely gave you the ropes on what to do and what not to do as an officer.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because I know today that if you join in like the medical or the legal, I'm trying to think of what other career fields, they have a specialized training just for those career fields, and then they have an officer training for different career fields. So it's changed a lot since when you joined, but it's really interesting to hear about how like different things are and how quickly things change.
Well, that was quite a few years ago. I went in 1986, so it's been a few years since all that happened, yeah.
Just a few years. So you were already like connected to military life, but then your husband's was enlisted and you were an officer. So yeah. What was that dynamic like?
Well, it was interesting because we were already married for many years when I became active duty. So they knew he was enlisted and they took me because they needed nurses. So for the most part, really, there wasn't any issue because I was at the hospital. He was flight line. Some of the older officers seemed to, you know, would have issues a little bit, give Bob a hard time, I think, more than me. but didn't really have any issues. You know, we pretty much just, he had to salute me when he went by me, but there wasn't really anything major. We also went to Desert Storm together, so that was kind of interesting because we're in closer quarters and all that dynamics. And we're very affectionate openly, so we just tried to, you know, squelch that when we were around everybody else because it act more professional.
I was going to ask about Desert Storm because you said 1986, and then I was like, boom, boom, boom! I know that Desert Storm happened shortly after that. So was there anything that you wanted to highlight between like when you went on active duty and then the lead up to Desert Storm?
It was interesting because I was working intensive care nursing out in California when I went into the Air Force and we got stationed at Myrtle Beach. So I went from, you know, really high intensity nursing to a small base at Myrtle Beach that didn't have ICU at all, intensive care unit. So I was back to a med-surg floor, you know, where I had started many years before. So that was kind of a really big change for me. I was really active in teaching things because I was always teaching advanced life supports and those kinds of things, ACLS. So I kind of jumped into that to kind of fill some of that wanting to do something more than just standard bedside nursing, which is what I ended up being doing again. So, and in that I met two nurse anesthetists who kind of took me under their wings and said, I taught them ACLS and they're like, you need to be a nurse anesthetist. And I'm like, I don't like the operating room. That was one area when I was in training. I'm like, oh no, I don't ever want to be in the operating room. But through shadowing them and working towards them, I really realized the autonomy I was maybe missing that could be put back into place by doing anesthesia. So I had planned to go in and I actually applied for AFIT for the ability to go to school through the military. I applied actually when we were in Desert Storm. The only paper I had camels and stuff on the top of it. So maybe that's why I got in. They felt bad. I was at Desert Storm. I'm like, well, let's get her in there. I don't know. But yeah, so that's where I applied from and then found out pretty quickly afterwards that I got accepted to that. So the transition was from going from Myrtle Beach to Desert Storm was very interesting. You know, you have a lot of, I don't know what other people have talked about with that, but you have a lot of buildup of your training and just your facilities and stuff when you first get over there. And then you're training, waiting for something to happen. And then the war starts. And thank God there were not a lot of casualties. Probably the majority of the people that we saw, we were at King Fahd International Airport, which was the closest base to Kuwait. Or the A-10s were, and the warthogs. The Saudis called it flying death, I think was their term for those planes, because they were really slow and they did a lot of damage. But anyway, just all that buildup and waiting, and then the war started, and just a blessing that there weren't more injuries and stuff. So that part, I ran the emergency room there, which mostly dealt with triaging people, where they would go if with their casualties. So that's what I did over there. But lots of interesting things happened in Desert Storm. And to be honest with you, I just really felt that God was protecting us to so much degree. We had bombs being launched off our A-10 into a revetment wall that didn't explode. Somebody else pickled off something into a bomb dump and didn't explode all the bombs. I mean, things like that you could really have been catastrophic weren't. And so it was just really a blessing for that.
Yeah, that sounds a little bit scary, right? Well, I mean, that's scary stuff.
Yeah, it was interesting because the one that got shot off into the revetment, that flight line was separated into reservist and active duty. And this happened on the reserve side. And honestly, the reason it happened is they didn't change the technical steps for war. They were practicing like there wasn't a live bomb on the plane and they were following their checklist. So anyway, when that happened, I'm in the emergency room and I hear all about it. I heard the noise it made and they said, oh, it's on the reserve side. So I'm thinking, oh, wonderful. Bob, my husband, is on the active duty flight line. He's nowhere near all that, what that's happening. Well, they actually called his whole unit that he was working with that night that they trusted to go over and move the A-10s out of the revetments before the bomb exploded. So yeah, he was all in the middle of it. And I just thought the whole time, he's not anywhere near there. So, it was quite a shock when I found out, yeah, he was right in the middle of all of it.
Your husband, you're like, my husband's fine. And then you're like, oh, he was actually really like right there and you didn't even know. What was it like to, you talked a little bit about like toning down like your relationship when people weren't around, but like, did you guys have separate barracks or because you were married, were you able to be in the same place? Like, what was that dynamic?
That was very interesting. So I was in a tent with five other officers and Bob was in a tent with 11 other enlisted guys. So they were really jam packed into his tent. So I'll just give you the thought of what that would smell like with 12 guys in a tent, give you that. So we weren't together. We were about, I don't know, 12 tents apart. Our hospital commander and assistant commander, there were a lot of married couples that came from the hospital to that, to Desert Storm. So they had arranged for time for us to be together on a calendar so we could sign up for time to be together. And they had a place where we could go. So yeah, it was very interesting to be, you know, you come back the next day and everybody's like, oh, you look happy. I'm just like, you know, we called it the love shack. So that'll just give you an idea. But it was great to have that time together to, you know, because we had left a 2-year-old daughter at home to, you know, to be talking about that and sharing that and the difficulties with that. So, yeah, it was a very interesting time, that's for sure. And I actually went on Good Morning America. I was asked to speak about being a married person, being active duty on first time in a war zone. Usually you could be in a war zone as a woman, but you couldn't be married until Desert Storm. So I was on Good Morning America to talk about that. And of course they asked all those kind of questions like, well, what did you and your husband do? And I'm like, you know, we just did whatever was best for the whole group. But that was my standard answer back then, you know, can't talk about all that. Just that we just, you know, did whatever, because they were like, well, if one of you could go back home to be with your child, who would that be? And of course, I'm like, the mother goes back home, right? But no, really, it's whatever serves the military the best. If they needed me more, or they needed Bob more, then the other one would go back. But of course, neither one of us went back. We were there for about 8 months.
And did you have your family care plan in place? And like, how did that, I mean, because I've heard stories, it was like really quick. And if you think about it today with like a cell phone, I was telling my kids, I was like, yeah, when I was growing up, you go to Disneyland and you wouldn't have a phone. And like, how would you find people? And so it's like funny because even though like I grew up with that, I'm like, how did we do that? And so it's kind of crazy to hear like with how quickly like the deployment orders came down, how people were able to like find family and do all that stuff. So what was that like?
We, of course, did have a plan in place. I think when you're making those plans, especially back then, not so much now, I think people realize it can definitely happen now more so than ever. But back then you really didn't think, oh, this is not probably ever going to happen, but you had a plan in place. And my plan was for our daughter to go down to Florida with relatives. And so when we found out, Bob actually deployed about a month ahead of me. So while he deployed, I was getting things situated with her and getting her to Florida. And then I deployed. So we had about a month apart, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, something. So yeah, we got that all settled well, and she had a blast. She loved it. And every time they would ask, well, where's your mom and dad? She would say TDY. She thought we were, and she'd point to the sky. She thought we were on the airplane for 8 months circling, I guess. So it was kind of cute, but she had a blast down there with all her.
That's funny. She's like, they're in the sky. I don't need to worry about. And another like technology change that happened between like then and now is like how much more connected people are with people overseas. So were you even able to call back and talk to your daughter? And I know she was little, but like, did you have any communication and what was that like?
We did. They had a tent set up with all kinds of phones lined up and you had, you know, 5 minutes every so often that you could call somebody at home. So yeah, we were able to communicate with her occasionally and with our parents. So that was good. Nothing like having a cell phone, though.
Right.
Or
I know.
Computer, or, you know, yeah, nothing like that. But yeah, we did get to do that occasionally. It wasn't very often. And it wasn't probably for the first couple months before they set that up. But so we wrote letters. We have lots of letters that are saved now back and forth to each other. So her parent, my parents and Bob's parents would write for her and we would write to her. So yeah, it was good.
I love that. Yeah, I was at a base and we had a morale tent, which had internet, but we didn't have Wi-Fi. And at the very end of my deployment, Bagram got Wi-Fi and it was like so crazy to like use my computer to FaceTime. Well, not FaceTime, to use Skype. And then a friend a few years later, like FaceTimed her husband in his room. And I was like, oh my goodness, it's so crazy how much it changes in such a short time.
That's definitely a good use for technology.
So you were there for about 8 months, and even though the war was not that long, but you said there was a lot of like spin up time. And then after it ended, how quickly did you come home?
Don't remember exactly. I know I stayed a little bit longer to actually fly home with Bob. He did a lot of the logistics stuff there, getting everybody in and out. So got permission to stay an extra week to actually go home with him on the same plane. So I don't remember exactly how long afterwards, but it was a little while before we actually got to go back home. Yeah, it wasn't immediate once the war was done. There was, you know, you're still moving equipment and taking things apart and stuff like that. So we had to take out down the whole portable hospital, had to be put back together and sent on a plane.
I mean, you have to, it takes all the time to build it up and then all the time to take it down. And I mean, it makes a lot of sense. So you came back, you were reunited with your daughter.
We were still in Myrtle Beach. And then I was accepted into anesthesia school. We went to San Antonio for the didactic part at the University of Texas Health Science Center. And then Bob actually came with me. And then we were getting ready to go to California to Travis for the rest of my clinicals. And they all of a sudden said they wouldn't send him. He had to cross train or get out. So he said, well, I'll cross train if I can go where she's going. And of course, they wouldn't guarantee that. So he got out at that point because we didn't want to separate the family again, you know, and I would be, you know, 12 to 14 hour days in training. So it just wouldn't have worked out very well. So he stayed home for that last year of my training and took care of her and took care of me. So that was really good that that was able to happen. He said that was the hardest job he ever had that year.
Being taking full-time care of
mom and dad. Yeah.
I mean, it's a lot of work. So yeah. So you had put in your application while you were deployed and then you started school and then you had more school in California at Travis, which they have a hospital there.
So at Travis, one day I was a resident in training. The next day I graduated. And the day after that, I was an instructor for anesthesia. So only in the military, right? So that worked out really well. I got to stay there another 4 years. So I spent quite a bit of time there at Travis and then went to from there to South Dakota. That was my last base. Quite a different state as far as climate and all that goes, but beautiful out there and got to really explore the West while we lived there and got a lot more training, you know, time under my belt for anesthesia and then decided to get out of the military. I was selected for major. The weirdest thing happened. The chief of the nurse corps, the general nurse corps came to our base and we had some time one-on-one with her. And one of the questions I had was, you know, I really don't want to leave my clinical, what I'm doing, what you've paid all this money to train me to do, to be a manager and run a desk somewhere and not necessarily even in the hospital. And she said, well, there never will be a clinical track for advancement past major. You have to go the management track. So that happened. And that kind of, you know, it was a little bit hard for me to hear because I really, really loved doing anesthesia. That's what I wanted to stay doing. And I want to take a big break in my time from that. And then my dad passed away really unexpectedly. So between those two things, decided to get out and we landed in Maryville, Tennessee, which was a hard decision because our whole married life, the military had told us where to go and where to live. So we finally decided on Maryville, which is a great little city outside of Knoxville. And that's where I practiced the rest of my career for. So I ended 42 years of nursing. I ended last January and now am just doing a business to help people's health in a different way.
Awesome. So you had been, how long had you been in the military? About 10?
Actually almost 13 years. Yeah, 12 and a half. 12 and three quarters years. So yeah. Everybody's like, well, stay and retire. I'm like, well, cause you know, life happens and you have to make these decisions. So, and it really was the best decision. Our kids could finish being raised in one town that they grew to love. And, it was all good.
Yeah, I think sometimes people are like, but you're so close to retiring. You're like, I'm also very far away.
Yeah.
And especially if your passion was like to do the clinical stuff and you knew that you were going to get taken out of that. And then if you wanted to go back to nursing after you retired, it would be kind of harder because you would have, you know, stepped away.
Exactly. Yeah. And I really loved the art of doing anesthesia. I really loved it. In fact, I would still probably be doing practicing some, except that the politics and stuff in hospitals, you know, after so many years, I'm like, okay, I've had enough fun. I'm just going to retire. And plus LifeWave dropped in my lap. I came back from Desert Storm and got really sick. So a lot of veterans did ended up with what's called Gulf War syndrome now, which has lots of components to it. And I really had a lot of issues with nerve issues, chronic pain and muscle pain and joint pain from some autoimmune stuff that developed, sleep disturbances, colon issues, which eventually led to colon cancer. So all kinds of issues that I really tried for 25 plus years to find natural ways to heal. I didn't want to be on a bunch of medications. I gave really strong drugs and used big needles, but I didn't want to have them on myself. So I was always searching, and I used a lot of different things over the years that would help the symptoms, but didn't get to the root cause and actually heal things in my body until I found LifeWave. And since I had such amazing results, I'm like, well, how can I not tell people about this? So it's very, I don't know if you've heard of it before, but it's very amazing technology. I was very skeptical at first when I heard about it, because it's a patch that you wear on your skin, and you think, how can this patch activate my stem cells to work again? It just sounded too good to be true. But when I did a deep dive into the company and the studies, which were well done, double blind, good studies, I was like, okay, this makes sense. It activates a copper peptide that they've known activates stem cells, and that's how it works. So it's pretty simple technology. It's phototherapy, kind of like when you go out into the sun and that wavelength of light starts the process of vitamin D. It's the same idea, except your body is the source of infrared heat that activates that phototherapy wavelength of light. So I had great results. So I'm like, how can I not share this with people? So then I started doing that about 2 years ago. And it's just been amazing to see people have some healing results and just have a better quality of life and have their energy and their health back to where it used to be. So it's been really kind of fun because I get to see people and work with them over time and build relationships, not just, you know, see them in the operating room and build some trust with them in 10 or 15 minutes, put them out and then wake them up and see they're on their way, unless it was somebody I knew that I was working on. So yeah, it's just a whole different process, but I'm still using my nursing skills to help people identify what issues they have that might be helped with what patch. Not that I'm diagnosing anything, just trying to get them the best product that they might need to heal the quickest. So yeah, it's just been a lot. It's been great fun. And my husband and I do it together. So that makes it even better that we're building all this together.
That's awesome. I love that you found something that you're passionate about and you can continue to like tap into the nursing aspect and your history, but also like try something new and not have the politics of like a hospital and all the stuff that goes along with that. And so that sounds really cool. And I think it is really important to talk about some of the issues that veterans have from being deployed either during Gulf War or during Operation Enduring Freedom or Operation Iraqi Freedom. And I did an episode last year about the PACT Act, and I finally filed my disability claim. And it's so important that we, you know, use the VA resources, but then also find, you know, other natural resources that can help us.
Right. Yeah, I actually had quite a bit of disability from it and originally, and then just did the PACT Act to add on the colon cancer, because that was never, gastrointestinal cancers were never on the list until recently for that PACT Act. So yeah, anytime there was any kind of chemical exposure, and we had burning oil fields for many, many days, and the tar was so thick, it blotted out the sun. That's how much was in the air. So we're, you know, inhaling all that into us and absorbing into our skin. So it was, you know, really kind of sad that it took so long to honestly for the government to say, yeah, there is a bunch of issues that are coming out of that. What I love about LifeWave patches is they're healing naturally, and they also help with emotional issues, anxiety, depression, post-traumatic stress, people on the spectrum have some really, really good results from it. So just helping people in that way. Bob and I have a really huge why of why we're wanting to build this business to a bigger platform is because we want to be able to give free patches to veterans who can't afford their own patches. So that's our really, really big why of why we're doing this. Because one of my kids is like, Mom, can you just not relax and just not, you know, you worked hard your whole life, just relax and don't be doing stuff all the time. And I said, well, you know, you need purpose in your life. And if without purpose, I think, you know, God put us on this earth for purpose, not just to be here. So to me, that's my big purpose is to help fellow veterans that, you know, really need help. We lose way too many veterans every day to suicide. So to be able to make some small dent in that, and we're doing a little bit of that locally, giving some free patches, but we really want to have a big reach nationwide. So that's the big why.
That's awesome. I love hearing that you guys have like that why behind your mission and the fact that your kids are like, just chill out and enjoy your retirement. But I think it's good. My mom retired a few years ago and now she's a crazy flower lady and she's helping me like grow my garden, but she like loves what she's doing and she does it so she can give bouquets away. And she taught for like so many years and now she's starting to teach people. And so it's like really cool that she found something she's super passionate about and it relates to teaching a little bit, but it's also something totally different. And I think a lot of people when they retire, they're like, they want to do something, but they don't know what to do. And they also feel like, oh, you're supposed to relax. It's like, yeah, but you can relax and still, you know, do something.
Yeah. I think the one thing that I love about it is it's on my own time. So like my mom recently passed away. So when I needed to take off a bunch of time and do what I needed to do for that, you know, I'm not having to ask anybody for time off. And my business is still going because I have other people work in the business too. And, you know, so yeah, it's just, it's a whole different way to work. And I don't really think of it as work. I just think of it as time to share what LifeWave can do for you and just let people decide if it's something for them or something they, for someone they know and love that needs help. So yeah, that's the fun. It's really kind of fun. I know it sounds like it wouldn't be, but it really is kind of fun just to help people. Without drugs. I love it. Yeah. Because, you know, I mean, there are times your body really needs medication and I'm not. But what I love about these patches, they don't interfere with what anybody is already doing. It's not going to interfere with what they're on, but it may actually get them off some medications, which is kind of good. So, yeah, just helping people in a different kind of a different way for health. It's just been extremely rewarding so far. So I can't imagine doing anything else, to be honest with you.
And I love that it's like the mental health side and the physical health. There's, you know, positive benefits for both because, I mean, you talked about veteran suicide. There are so many veterans who struggle with, you know, trauma and all the different things that go along with serving and then all the health issues on the physical side. So I love that it's both sides of it. So if someone wants to get more information, where would be the best place for them to go?
They can go to Janet Hudson for Health. forhealth@gmail.com. And I'd be happy to answer any of their questions. They also can text or call me at 865-604-0895. Be happy to answer questions and see if I can help them anyway.
I love it. That's awesome. So I'll put that information in the show notes so that people can find it easily. And then is there anything else from either your time in the military or your transition out of the military that you want to talk about before I ask my final question?
I think that for me personally, my transition, because I was going from being a nurse anesthetist in the military to being one in civilian life, I think that I really had an easy transition that way because I didn't have to reinvent what am I going to do when I get out. And I think a lot of people in the military who aren't going into the career field that they were trained for in the military really struggle with that. So I did not have that. What I did have was I missed the camaraderie and the sense of family that you get so quickly in your military life. It took quite a few years moving to a new place to really get some good friends and, you know, really feel like I'm part of the community again. And I think when you're in the military and you go base to base, you know, you're only there for what, 3, maybe 4 years. So you quickly get your tribe around you, right? And so that part probably was the hardest for me transitioning was, okay, I don't know, find church, find friends, find, you know, get established It just took longer than I thought. And when I was bringing neighbors over things, you know, for holidays or whatever, or someone new would move in, and everybody's like, "You're so nice." I'm like, "This is just normal. I'm like, you just do that, you know, when there's somebody new in the neighborhood, you just welcome them." But I think part of that is the military life. It's part of what you do.
Yeah, my husband is getting close to retirement, and we're planning to stay at the base that we're at. And it was so weird to shift my mindset of, like, it's not just like get as much impact as fast as possible, because like this is where we're going to be and then we're going to move. Like, we're planning on staying here. We bought a house. And it's just so weird to like shift your thinking. And I'm sure when my husband leaves the military officially and like he's done, it'll be another shift, because we won't be, you know, in the military and everything will be different. I think that's the hard part of like transition, is there's two pieces, like finding a job and a career, and the like emotional aspect. And not enough people talk about that.
Yes. And not very long after I got out, just 2 years later, 9/11 happened. And, you know, my first thought was, oh, do they need me to go back in? You know, because it's just what you do. You just think, you know, do they need me? And you know, my husband's like, they do not need you. You are not going back. But that, you know, I think that's a normal response for people who have served their country. You just want to do everything you can when something bad's happening.
Yeah. I mean, especially September 11th, it sparked so many people to join the military. And then if you had just gotten out and you're still in that like emotional transition phase, and then you're like, well, I could just go right back and then it would solve everything.
Yes. My husband's like reining me in. No, honey, don't do that.
That's when I was looking to go back into through the guard and the reserves. And my husband was like, no, no. He's like, you're going to deploy. I'm going to be on my own. I know.
Yeah, that's kind of was Bob's thought. He's like, no, we have two kids here to deal with. No, we're not doing that. So, but you know, you do kind of have those thoughts because you want to help in any way that you can.
Yeah. I'm so glad we got to talk about that, because that's such an important part of transition. And I don't think you can talk about the emotional challenge of leaving the military and how, you know, it's something that you can't prepare for. Like, you didn't know until it was gone. And then you're like, wait, this is missing. And so I think that's like one of the hardest parts is, and you don't know what part of it is going to affect you when you leave. And so I think it's important to talk about and hear stories.
Yeah, I think to be realizing that it's normal to feel that sense of loneliness, to not have that community around you again, that if at least if people know to expect it, it maybe won't be so bad. I don't know.
Well, and it hopefully they'll get connected with veteran organizations and start connecting with veterans, because I think that's one of the things that I didn't have. I didn't have other veterans to talk to, and I felt like I was transitioning wrong because I was feeling all these emotions. And then I started talking to people and I was like, oh, this is normal. I'm normal. And so I.
Yes, you're normal. Yes. Well, we've also gotten really active in veterans organizations here locally. And we serve a bunch of breakfasts on Saturdays to veterans. And then we have some evening things that feed them, but also are usually at breweries. So that seems to attract more of the younger crowd of veterans that have gotten out, which is good. So we're getting, you know, a little bit of both, doing those two things with our organization. So yeah, it's good. And it's just building community. That's all our focus is on, is building community. Because if people feel that they are part of something, then they won't want to leave that. So it's all part of what we're trying to do. It's good stuff.
Yeah, it sounds like you're doing so much great stuff for your community. So I love hearing that. But we're going to run out of time, but I want to end the interview with one last question, which is, what advice would you give to a young woman who's considering joining the military?
Well, I think the biggest thing is to maybe decide if it's what's the reason you're going in. Is the reason you want to serve your country, or are you looking for educational benefits, which are certainly good? You know, if you're wanting to get your degree in something, further your education, and also to be accepting of the changes that are going on, that things that maybe you can't control, but just to go with the flow, because it really is worth it. But sometimes you might think, oh, what have I got myself into? Especially if you're someone who, you know, doesn't like to take direction from other people. It's definitely a growing up period. I was older when I went in, so didn't have so much of an issue with that. But I think for younger people going in, it can be a very amazing period of growth, both in their mental growth and their physical growth. So I think, you know, if that's something that appeals to them, to go for it. I think nowadays, more so than when I went in, people have to realize that you're probably going to get deployed somewhere you may not want to be. So that's definitely an issue I would think of. I've got to tell you, my son, when he was younger, came to me one day and he was just really acting weird. I'm like, Tyler, what's up? And he's like, our whole family is military, but I don't want to go in the military. He was just practically in tears. And I'm like, it's okay, honey. As a mom, I don't really want you to go in the military. So it's okay, because things have definitely changed in our world. People are deploying and deploying more often. So, you know, those are things to look at. But a lot of times it's a very rewarding career. So take all those things into account and make a decision.
I think that's great advice. And it's so important to know, like, why you're joining, and then to know, like, the risk of, like, how the military is going to control your life if you might deploy, all these things that you need to think about. And it's a, you know, 4-6 year commitment. So it's not just something you can be like, this isn't for me. You have that time committed. And so, yeah. And I think the more you think about why you're joining when you're joining, especially if it's like for education, you can start using those education benefits while you're still in. And you can start preparing for, you know, transition when you're planning on getting out, you know, looking at schools and having a plan. And so I think it's so important to think about, you know, all those things.
Yes, absolutely. Well, I appreciate you so much having me on today, Amanda. This is great.
Thanks so much for being on. I'm really glad we got to do this interview.
I am too. Thanks so much.